And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blast-off. X-1.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
All right, it's a little bit after 11 o'clock, 7 minutes after 11 here on the WGN Radio Theater, program 112 in this series. And happy Sunday to you, Lisa Wolf, my co-host with the dimples.
Thank you. Happy Sunday to you too, Carl Amari, co-host without the dimples.
We have Mike Costella, our executive producer, in the studio as well. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
And our producer, Elif Garris, is in the booth. Hi, Elif.
Hi.
We have three classic radio shows for you tonight. Suspense, starring Edward G. Robinson. We have Fibber McGee and Molly from 1940. And then Dragnet, starring Jack Webb. And before we do any of that, we have a very, very special guest in the studio. She's sitting here in front of me. She's as beautiful as a woman can possibly be. Kathy Garver is in the house. Hey, Kathy, how are you?
Fine, Carl. I have just one dimple.
Oh. It's quite beautiful, of course. Kathy, of course, is best known as playing Sissy on the very famous Family Affair television series. And she's done many, many other things. We're going to have a few minutes to talk with her. And she has a new book out, right, Lisa?
Yeah, and I want to mention, most importantly, too, that this is a Family Affair 50th anniversary celebration, that this show premiered on September 12th of 1966. So it is September.
Well, I mean, you're only 39 now, so how is that even possible?
I did a Twilight Zone.
There
I think you Carl
go.
Knows about Twilight Zones, and I got some of those.
So we're amazed that this show has really persisted through time and is truly iconic, and your role on there is really something special, and then we want to talk about that. And of course, you have a new book that just came out called Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? So we are so excited to have you with us today.
We're going to have our celebrity scoop segment in the second half of the hour, so we will do that. But let's talk with Kathy a little bit. So Kathy, you started in this business, we won't say what year.
Thank you.
But one of the first things you ever did was the Ten Commandments. I mean, how do you start your career with one of the biggest movies of all time? This is a movie that you were in as a very young child. You had scenes with Charlton Heston. You were directed by Cecil B. DeMille. Tell us a little bit about that.
It was rather an auspicious beginning, I must say, and I think it was blessed. And it's also celebrating an anniversary this year, and we're not going to say how many years, but that was, it's not the silent version, I'll tell you that. And it was a wonderful way to start as a small child, and usually children remember things not through their intellect, but through their senses. So I remember the sounds and the smells and all of the things that were going on around me, especially during the Exodus scene, which was where my slave girl Rachel character came into being.
Yeah, but Cecil B. DeMille actually wrote scenes for you. He liked you so much, and Charlton Heston enjoyed working with you. And so this movie, obviously one of the biggest movies of all time, it airs all the time, led to a career in television and movies, and you were on TV shows like Jim Bowie, which is very cute. You played this little French girl on there. And then you were on The Millionaire. And what are some of the other television shows you did?
Well, that was the time where they were actually taping live presentations. So like Climax, it would be like a little play and a playlet in matinee theater. And that was also the time of Western. So I did Sheriff of Cochise.
Yes.
And all those. Plus radio. I did a lot of classic radio. Betty Davis.
Yeah.
And Whispering Streets.
You were on Our Miss Brooks on television too, right? What did you play on that? So Eve Arden, you got to be with Eve Arden and Richard Crenna and all those great actors on Gail Gordon.
Oh, I mean, gosh,
she got to work with all these people that we talk about here, Lisa, all the time. So do you remember what your part was on that?
I was a little Italian girl. I was playing all these different ethnicities at that time. I was an Indian on Sheriff of Cochise. I was an Italian on Armis Brooks. And then I was doing all of the little French girl.
They were like, we need an Italian. Get that Kathy Garver girl.
She's, you know, the mark of a versatile actor.
Yes.
And of course, you have such a studied. You didn't just become an actor. Tell us how you became one. I know you went to UCLA and the British Royal School of Drama. Is it?
Yes. Well, in my book, Ex-Child Stars, I talk about how child stars and that begin very early at 6, 7, whatever, have such a difficult time making the transition to an adult actor, an adult star, or just having success in whatever path they choose, whether it's a lawyer, whatever. I was able to do it because, Lisa, as you said, I went to UCLA and I got a degree in speech and a master's in theater arts. And then I went to England and went to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. So I had all the training then to go on. Some of these kids, you know, they are in a series for 5 years.
Yeah, they look cute. They can hit their mark.
But they're not trained the way you are.
No, they're not trained. And they think, oh, well, I've done a series for 5 years. I know everything there is to know about acting. And this is not correct.
They
need to learn how to make a character. They can't just keep on being cute and hitting their marks and saying their lines.
Right.
Yeah.
So Family Affair, because I want to get to the book too, but Family Affair, you know, came your way, right? You got this audition. They had the two younger kids already booked. Brian Keith was already booked for it. Sebastian Cabot was already booked for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they bring you in, and you had worked with the producer at one time on something else.
I worked with him, and he remembered you. From The Millionaire.
Ah.
I did that TV show.
He brings you in to play this very beautiful young child on the series. There was two younger children, Jody and Buffy, and then you're Sissy. And how did that all happen? You get in there, you audition for it, and all of a sudden they just say, yeah, you're starting tomorrow?
Well, it was pretty quick because they were already shooting the pilot when I went on the interview the week before. And it was a little difficult because playing all these Italian and French parts and Indian parts, I had dark hair and dark eyes. And it didn't quite fit the set of the blue eyes and blonde hair. So my dear mother came to the sorority at UCLA with this can of Streaks and Tips, sprays my hair real quick. It's like a helmet. I felt like something out of Goldfinger. And then I go over, I'm talking to the producer, and he's looking, he says, what's wrong with your hair? my hair?
Nothing.
Yes, but it's turning green.
Only a mother.
Yes, don't you love them?
And also, we know that this show is very iconic and very modern and very progressive in its thoughts and its episodes and its premise.
Right. It was one of the first shows that had a parental figure that wasn't related necessarily to the family. This was our uncle, and it had been a mom and dad and the kids, or a single father and kids, but not an uncle with a manny.
Right.
And he took us in, and so that was kind of a first. It was one of the first shows in color.
Oh yeah, sure. Oh yeah.
And
the kaleidoscope at the beginning, we all remember it, and that great theme. And Brian Keith, you know, he was a big movie star here, and all of a sudden you're doing all these scenes with him all the time, and it must have been really something. I mean, probably your life was just going so fast, right?
There were a lot of
things. You had school going on. You had this show. It was a hit show.
And discos were going on, and dating was going on.
Right.
I learned a lot from them because Brian had a particular style, as did Sebastian Cabot, who was very studied, and it was hard for him to learn lines. So he'd studiously, you know, go over every single one and memorize it and come to the set, and he'd go over it with the dialogue coach, and then he finally had it. And then Brian would come and said, oh, what do we have today? Okay, let's go.
Yeah.
So his casual, relaxed style mixed with Sebastian, I said, okay, this is an interesting study for a young girl at that time to take in and absorb.
Now, you've written three books now, right? So you
Correct.
Wrote Family Affair, cookbook.
Right.
Right, the Family Affair cookbook, which I have signed to me. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I have then the... what's the other one? The other one is the
Surviving Sissy. My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood.
I have that one as well, signed to me, I might say. And now I don't have the new one yet, but Kathy says she's going to send it to me, sign to me.
Yes.
And so that one is called, tell us again.
Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now?
Now, here is what you do, folks. This is available everywhere. It's available at bookstores. It's available at Amazon. But here's the way you get the book. You go to her website. Go to KathyGarver.com with a K. KathyGarver.com. Real easy. Go there. And what'll happen is she'll autograph it for you. That's the way to go.
Free of charge.
There you go. That's how you do it.
I was going to say, and most importantly, that book highlights not only the successes of some of the child stars, but some of the misfortunes as well. So this is not an easy road.
No, it's not. And sometimes child stars get a bad rap because you hear about so many of them, Lindsay Lohan, and oh, there's one at it again. But there is redemption in many of them that hit bottom and say, oh, okay, time to get out of this morass and come back. Even like Johnny Whitaker on the show was involved in drugs and alcohol, was penniless. His family did an intervention, saved him, and now he's a drug counselor.
Right. Yeah.
Unfortunately, there was no one around to save sweet Anissa Jones, who died at 18.
So sad.
But there's Ron Howard and Brooke Shields that, you know, just went on.
There's many more successes than failures, and you highlight this in an awesome book. So do check it out. Go to KathyGarver.com. And Kathy's tomorrow is going to be on The You, right? You're on?
Yes, You and Me This Morning with Jean Sparrow and Melissa Forman on The U that emanates from Chicago.
Yeah,
and we're
so
celebrating
check that out. Yeah.
Our 50th. Oh, did I say that number? I'm 39. You know that, Mike and Lisa and Carl.
That's
oh, my good
right.
friends know this.
You know what,
see
Kathy?
Her
I was going to say, you have not stopped working. So this was maybe a launch for your career, but you have obviously made this career continue. And of course, we wish you success in continuing. I know you're starting a new television show as well. So, I mean, this is just the beginning.
Thank you so much.
So go to KathyGarver.com. Kathy, it's always a pleasure to see you. You're beautiful as always.
You are.
And we'll watch you tomorrow on the what's it called again?
You and Me This Morning.
You and Me, yes. We'll check
and
that out.
And all of you out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take a quick break. Thank you, Kathy. When we come back, we're going to tune into Suspense. Stick around. All right, we're running a little late here, so let's get into Suspense. Edward G. Robinson stars in this episode called The Man Who Wanted to Be Edward G. Robinson. This is from September 30th, 1948. Here's part one now of Suspense.
Suspense. And its 60,000 dealers and service stations bring you radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Starring tonight, Mr. Edward G. Robinson in Anton Leder's production of The Man Who Wanted to Be Edward G. Robinson. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I'm making this statement in accordance with a promise to a very dear friend. It's a complete statement in every detail, even including those matters which are to me personally most incriminating. Because my trust in my friend is such that I haven't the slightest concern on that score, or any other. What follows concerns primarily two persons. Myself, Homer J. Hubbard, and my wife, Ada Samsey Hubbard. Even when I was courting Ada, I was aware that hers was a strong and domineering personality, say the least. And after we were married, well, at first I put up with Ada's constant nagging and petty persecutions as best I could. I put up with them for 20 long years. It wasn't until a memorable evening a little over a year ago that the first dim outlines of an escape and finally a plan began to take shape in my mind. You see, I never was much of a one for movies, but Ada and I had gone to see a picture called Little Caesar. It was a reissue, I think they call it, with an actor in it whom I'd never even heard of before.
Oh, so you thought you rat on me, huh? Well, get this. Nobody rats on Little Caesar, see?
The moment I saw that face on the screen, the minute I heard that voice, the world of reality around me simply ceased to exist. I lived that picture. I was Little Caesar. I was Edward G. Robinson. I was dimly conscious that my voice was like hers, that even my face without my spectacles and with my hair parted differently might have been mistaken for his, but it was more than that. It was his personality that fascinated me. And that I assumed. Calm, assured, tough. The kind of a man who made people do what he wanted done the way he wanted it done. Walking out of the movie theater afterward, I knew something had happened that was going to change my whole life.
Well, there's a man.
Yes.
Little Caesar, they call him, and well they may.
Yes.
And that Edward G. Robinson, I'll wager he's no Casper Milktoast either.
Yes, dear.
Is that all you have to say?
Well,
yes, dear. What does it take to arouse a little enthusiasm in you anyway?
Well,
here you've seen a fine performance, a picture that'd get anybody in the world excited.
That's
and
right.
All you can say is, yes, dear.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you were half the man that Robinson is.
But from that moment, I no longer really cared what Ada wished or thought. I'd begun my escape into a dream world of my own making, a world in which I was Edward G. Robinson. As the weeks went by, I began to identify myself with him more and more. I imagined myself in countless dangerous situations, and when no one was looking, I imitated him and I affected his mannerisms. I would start daydreaming at my desk, wondering what the other people in the office would think if I suddenly exposed this hidden side of my personality.
Okay, everybody. Stay where you are, will you? Hold your hands over your head.
What is this?
I don't want any monkey business, see? Now stand back there, Ryan.
Why?
Any funny stuff from you, and I'll let you have it.
Hubbard, this is preposterous. What do you mean by such behavior? Is this your idea of a joke?
You'll see whether it's a joke or not if you make one false move. Now, this isn't a water pistol I'm holding here, you know.
Hubbard, you're fired. Leave this office immediately.
Well, I'm getting out all right, but I'm not fired, see? I'm leaving well healed, and that's where you come in, Mr. Ryan.
Oh, please, please, Hubbard, be reasonable.
Now, shut up and do what I tell you. Keep your hands up in the air, will you? Walk over to that safe.
Well,
open it up. Get all the money out of it and put it right here on the desk in front of me.
Now,
get moving. I don't want to have any trouble with you, Ryan. I'm going to count three, and if you're not moving when I finish, you'll never move again, see? One. Two.
Hubbard.
Huh?
What are you doing daydreaming?
Oh.
Better get busy, or I should be forced to report you to Mr. Pemberton again.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Ryan. I'm terribly sorry. I can't understand what could have come over me. Well, that's the way it went. At the office, walking down the street, riding home on the bus. My life, outwardly calm and well-ordered, possibly even dull, was actually 24 hours of harrowing adventure with myself as the central figure. I saw every Edward G. Robinson picture that came out. It was the day after seeing Key Largo for the third time that Ada finally caught me. I was lathering my face and talking to myself.
Okay, you rat, you asked for it. You don't come out, see? We're coming in and get you, see? And we're coming in shooting, see? What's that? Oh, yeah? Well, only a dirty yellow rat would say that. Okay, boys, let him have it.
Well, I never. Of all the four performances I ever heard of, this beats everything.
Yeah.
What in the world are you jabbering about in here?
It's really nothing, dear Ada. I was just sort of trying to imitate Edward G. Robinson.
You were... What? Edward G. Robinson?
Yeah.
Oh, that's rich. You trying to imitate Edward G. Robinson?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I can't stand it. Don't stop. Don't let me interrupt the performance, Mr. Movie Star. Come on. Do your act for me.
Well, dear, I don't see anything so funny about it.
Oh, maybe you don't, but you're the only person in the world who wouldn't. Well, I'll leave you to your rehearsing. Why don't you imitate Eddie Bracken or Margaret O'Brien? I think you'd find it easier.
It was right then that I decided to kill her.
You shouldn't laugh like that, you know?
It's sinister.
It could make you mad. All right, that's the first portion of Suspense from September 30th, 1948. The Man Who Wanted to Be Edward G. Robinson, starring E.G. Robinson himself. Let's take a quick break, then we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa Wolf to my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
You smiley, smiley person, you.
We got some good dancing music tonight, and we had a good interview with Kathy Garver, and we got a lot of nice people walking by the studio here, so it's a good night.
She's the best. I love Kathy, and I can't wait to get her book. That's going to be great.
Yeah.
She's a terrific writer.
You know what? She's one of those people that's good at everything she touches.
Yeah. I've cooked some of the recipes.
You did not cook.
Lisa, I have. Honestly, I have. The Family Affair cookbook.
Yeah,
I have cooked some of the... yes, I
you
have.
You cooked?
I can cook.
You can?
When I have the recipe there, I mean, yeah.
So he warmed water in a pot. Come on.
That's right. and no, I have. There's some really great, you know, it's interesting. The book is everything you've ever seen on Family Affair that they cooked is in this book. It's very cool.
Yeah, she's remarkable.
Just go to KathyGarver.com. All right, so we're tuning in to Suspense with a big name celebrity on there, Edward G. Robinson. This is called The Man Who Thought He Was Edward G. Robinson from September 30th, 1948. I keep saying thought. It's actually called The Man Who Wanted to Be Edward G. Robinson. Here's the conclusion now of Suspense.
I might have decided to have mercy on her if she'd only let me alone. But Ada could never leave anyone alone. She ridiculed me at home and in front of our friends. Sometimes she'd let a few weeks go by without saying anything, and I would think that perhaps she had forgotten. No, Ada never forgot. She would wait until we were in a group of people, and then she would come out with it.
Well, my dear, you mean I haven't told you about Homer's dream world?
No.
He thinks he's Edward G. Robinson.
Edward? Oh, no.
Do tell us, Mr. Homer G. Robinson, when do you think you'll be getting your next contract from Hollywood? Oh, you folks have got Homer all wrong. He's a killer at heart. Just a cold-blooded killer.
I want to buy a gun.
Yes, sir. What kind of a gun?
I don't know much about guns, but that one looks all right.
Oh, yes, yes. It's a nice little gun.
Yes, isn't it?
$28.50.
Do I have to have a license?
Oh, not unless you're going to carry it on your person.
Oh.
Otherwise, we just register it for the police records under your name.
Oh, yeah.
What's the name?
Edward G. Robinson.
I beg your pardon.
You heard me, Mug. Edward G. Robinson. See? I had made my plans very carefully. My plan was that her murder would look like suicide. It would be a night when the moon was full, so that I could see her head on the pillow and aim carefully. I would fire the shot through the temple, quickly wipe my fingerprints from the handle of the gun, and then push it into her hand. And as the shocked and bereaved husband, I would call Dr. Wallace. The police wouldn't come until later, and when they did, I would be ready for them. I was so busy laying my plans that I hadn't been reading the papers and had to be told the big news.
Homer?
Hmm?
Oh, I beg your pardon. Mr. Robinson.
Oh, please.
Would you mind passing the spinach? Yeah. That is, if you're not too preoccupied with planning your next murder.
Oh, please, please, Ada.
Yeah, held up any banks lately, Homer?
Here you are, dear.
Oh, say, that reminds me, all kidding aside. Did you know that he's going to be here next week?
Who?
Edward G. Robinson. What? He's going to address the hobbyist convention.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I'd like to hear him.
I would, too. Oh, I'd love to see what a real He-Man is like. Not just a poor imitation.
We went. And at first, it was the most terrible disappointment of my life. because he wasn't tough or hard-boiled or anything like it. He seemed to be a mild-mannered little fellow, a little shy, almost like me. And he talked about orchids and modern art. They were his hobbies, he said, raising orchids and collecting paintings, modern paintings. Yes, but as the lecture went on, I began to understand. By the time it was over, I knew. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I consider myself twice blessed. Every man is blessed who has a hobby, but I am among the fortunate few who have two hobbies. And as the fellow said, whose fiancée had a twin sister, I love them both. Thank you. Thank you very much. Later that evening, I made an excuse to get away from Ada and went down to the hotel where I knew Mr. Robinson was staying. I bribed the bellboy $1.75 to tell me which was his room. I went down the hall and knocked at the door of 708.
Yeah?
Western Union.
Come on in.
Just put it on the... Well, say, Western Union dresses their boys up pretty snappy in this town, don't they? I must apologize for adopting the subterfuge, Mr. Robinson, but I have something of the utmost importance to discuss with you, and I was afraid you might not see me since, well, we've never been formally introduced.
Formally introduced? That's all right. What is it, autograph?
I'm afraid it's something a good deal more serious than that, Mr. Robinson.
Yeah? Well, you caught me right in the middle of shaving, as you see, but if you don't mind my finishing the job while you talk, why, come right along inside. Tell me all about it.
Thank you.
Well, now, what's on your mind?
Well, Mr. Robinson, I have a problem, and I feel you are the person best fitted in the world to tell me what to do.
That's so. Well, what is the problem?
Mr. Robinson, suppose... Of course, this is purely hypothetical. But suppose you were going to kill somebody.
Kill somebody?
Yes, in your own home, somebody who's, shall we say, related to you.
Yeah, now, hold on a minute,
Hubbard. Homer J. Hubbard.
Mr. Hubbard. I may look like a bad guy on the screen, but when I'm not working, I'm just a plain, peace-loving citizen like anybody else.
you can fool people like that audience tonight with all that talk about orchids and modern art. And it was very good, and I quite understand why you do it. A man in your position must have a front, of course, but you didn't fool me.
I didn't, huh?
Well, I know. Rather, I knew I could come to you and be perfectly frank.
Yeah, about what?
Why, about the murder.
About the what?
Well, look at me, Mr. Robinson. I'm a shy, inhibited, weak, utterly ineffectual person. I have none of your assurance, your hardness, your ability to cope with any situation in a direct, ruthless way.
Yeah?
Well, how many times I wished I had, because for... 20 years, my life has been made horribly, unbearably miserable by one person, my wife.
Oh, so that's the way it is.
Yes. For years, I bore it as best I could, and then one day I thought, how would you have coped with it? And of course, I knew at once you would kill her.
Yeah, now, wait a minute. Are you kidding me?
Oh, no, no, Mr. Johnson. I wouldn't think of such a thing. Look here. I even secured a gun to do it with. Hmm? Hey, yeah, you better give me that.
No, don't point it. Well, hand it to me by the barrel. Here.
I'll put it over here. Safer, you know. Yeah, I must admit, I know very little about firearms, and they're quite distasteful to me.
Yes, you and me both.
You, Mr. Robinson?
Well, I mean, small arms like that. Of course, a Tommy gun, that's different. That's the only thing to use.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. But I didn't know where to get a Tommy gun. I was afraid even if I did, I'd never master the art of using it.
Yeah, well, now you want to kill your wife, is that it? You want me to help you?
If you would, Mr. Robinson. If you could spare the time, I can't tell you how grateful I'd be.
Yeah, well, you know, Mr. Hubbard, you look like a pretty nice little guy. You might must really be an old battle axe to have got you in a frame of mind like this. All right, now I'll tell you what I'll do. I will help you.
Oh, Mr. Robinson.
Yes, but it's got to be done my way, see? It's got to be done right. You got to plan these things. Yeah, now, take this gat, this little flea, for instance, that you got over there. That's no kind of a rod to kill your wife with. Why, the caliber is all wrong. The ballistics would be all wrong. This would be on your trail just like that. Now, I got a gat home that's perfect for the job, get me? I've knocked off Orson Welles, Jimmy Cagg. Oh, I don't know how many guys with this. Now, the first thing when I get home, I'll send it to you parcel post, see?
Would you, Mr. Robinson?
Oh, sure, sure. Now, when you get it, just lay low, see? Now, don't do a thing till you hear from me. I'll lay this thing out for some of my boys, and then I'll get in touch with you, okay?
Oh, yes, Mr. Robinson. I don't know how to thank you.
Ah, forget it, pal. What's a little moiter between friends?
I could scarcely maintain my composure in the 2 days that followed. The second day, sure enough, the gun arrived. It was a great, heavy thing, the kind that's referred to, I think, as an automatic. Remembering its history, I handled it with the utmost care and reverence. I hid it in the garage where I keep my pipe that Hader won't let me smoke in the house. It was the next afternoon, a Saturday, that the phone rang. I rushed into the bedroom to answer it and close the door after me so Ada wouldn't hear in case it was. Yes?
This is Eddie.
Eddie?
Yeah, you know, Eddie Robinson.
Oh, yes, miss. Eddie.
You get that package I sent you?
Oh, yes, I got it.
Okay, but don't fool around with it, will you, until the time comes. Kind of tricky.
Oh, no, I won't.
Now, listen. The deadline is tomorrow night. Midnight, got it?
Yes.
Now, here's the layout. Tomorrow night, you go to bed, just as always, but have that gat handy and leave the front door open, see?
I understand.
Oh, wait a minute. I meant to ask you, is it safe to talk where you are?
Oh, yes. The phone's in the bedroom and the door is closed.
The bedroom, huh? That's swell. Well, now, listen. A little before midnight, you get up, see? When she's asleep, you take a spot just outside the bedroom door, see? Where you can keep an eye on her and on the front door, too, see?
Yes.
Well, at midnight, I'll contact you. We'll do your job, then make a quick getaway, and you can hole up in the hide until the heat's off. Get it? Tomorrow night, midnight.
I'll do everything just as you say, Eddie. I followed his instructions to the letter. Well, it seemed hours before Ada went to sleep that night. Seemed days until my watch finally crept around towards midnight. But at last, the time had come. I crept out of bed, got the gun out of my coat pocket, and took my position on the landing outside the bedroom door as he had told me to. And then suddenly the phone rang. The plan was ruined. Even Edward G. Robinson couldn't have foreseen this. I rushed back into the bedroom, hoping against hope that I could catch it before Ada woke up. But she already had the light on.
Homer! What in the world are you doing prowling around at this time of night with a gun in your hand?
Why, I thought I heard a burglar.
Burglar?
Mm.
When I've answered this phone, I want to talk to you, Homer Jeremiah Hubbard.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yes. What?
Hmm?
Oh.
What?
Homer. There is a burglar.
Is there?
Someone just saw him trying to get into the house.
Are you sure?
Of course I am. A man just phoned that he saw the burglar. Well, don't just stand there.
Yeah, no.
You've got a gun. Go on down and stop him.
Yes, but Ada...
Go on. Do you want us to be killed in our beds?
No.
Go on, I say.
Oh, wait. Why do you have to spoil everything? There was nothing to do but go. I crept down the stairs in the darkness. I knew what Edward G. Robinson would have done. He would have gone down and captured the burglar without the slightest trouble and turned him over to the police after giving him the beating he deserved. But somehow I didn't feel much like Edward G. Robinson just then. It was at that moment that the terrible thought occurred to me that maybe it wasn't the burglar.
Maybe this was Edward G. Robinson. I had no time to pursue the thought further.
Let him have it! Suddenly,
there was a barrage of shots and a confused yelling of voices. In my terror, I suppose I must have squeezed the trigger of my own gun because it began jumping and something in my hand. I tripped on something, and the next thing I knew, I was tumbling headlong down the stairs, and that was the last I remember. When I woke up, Ada was holding my head in her arms. She was crying. They made me stay in bed for a couple of days, but I really didn't mind. There were reporters to see me and take my picture for the paper, and all kinds of people. Even Mr. Ryan and Mr. Pemberton came to see me, and Ada? Well, Ada was simply a changed person. Nothing was too good for me. My slightest wish was literally her command. If the whole thing hadn't been an accident, if I'd planned it that way, it couldn't have turned out better. And then as the final climax that afternoon when the phone rang by my bed. Yes? Oh, yes. Eddie? You did, huh? Oh, nothing, really. Yes? Oh. Well, about that, things have changed. Oh, yes, they've changed quite a lot. I don't think we'll have to go through with it. Yeah, that's right. Oh, sure, she's right here. Just a minute. Eddie wants to talk to you, Ada.
Eddie?
Yeah, Eddie Robinson. Quite a pal of mine.
You mean Edward G. Robinson?
Oh, yes. We had quite a little chat that night. He was in town after I let you. He got pretty chummy. Yeah, go on.
Hello? Oh, yes. Oh, yes, Mr. Robinson. Oh, I know he is. Oh, I certainly will, Mr. Robinson. Yes, I know I'm very lucky. All right, Mr. Robinson. Goodbye. Oh, Homer, he knew all about it. He'd seen it in the papers.
Yeah, so he said.
And he said you were a hero. Mm. A real hero. Bigger than any movie hero that ever was.
He did, huh?
Oh, Homer.
Well, if Eddie Robinson says I'm a hero, I guess maybe I am. Couldn't have turned out better, Eddie. You know how grateful I am. I'm a regular little Caesar around town now, and my married life is all I've ever wanted to be. Of course, there are some things about the whole thing that confuse me a little. It has even occurred to me, I'll confess, that you might have had more of a hand in it than was generally known, and that the gun you sent me might have contained blanks, I believe you call them, because in spite of all the shooting, there wasn't one bullet hole anywhere in the house. And the gun had disappeared, which confused the police on what to, and the burglars might have been some of your boys playing a little joke. But I don't think you would do a thing like that to a pal, Eddie. Would you? I don't even think you would use the statement that you asked me to send you to hold over my head as a guarantee that I wouldn't try to kill Ada again. Now, not that I ever would. Yes, but even if you did all that, Eddie, I don't really mind. Because as you might say yourself, what's a little joke between pals?
Thank you, Edward G. Robinson, for a splendid performance.
Tonight's suspense play was written by Leslie Raddatz, with music composed by Lucian Morawick and conducted by Lud Gluskin. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. In the coming weeks, Suspense will present such stars as William Powell, Lucille Ball, John Garfield, Sidney Greenstreet, and many others. Make it a point to listen each Thursday to Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills.
That's Suspense, September 30th, 1948, with a man who wanted to be Edward G. Robinson, starring Edward G. Robinson, as heard on CBS. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, 9 minutes after midnight here. It's Monday, and I am your host, Carl Amari. To my right, Lisa Wolf, your co-host. And then Elif Garris. Oh, I like this music. She's our producer in there, and she picks this music. Ooh, this is good. I like this. I could probably
Probably oh, what?
I could probably dance to this.
Oh, I didn't know what you were going to say.
So a lot of people have been texting in that they spin their dial.
It is true. It is true.
A lot of people.
A lot of people. So there you go.
That's because, you know, you drive a Bentley and they don't have spinning dials in a Bentley. I drive a Gremlin. And so in mine, there's a spinner.
In the Gremlin?
Yeah.
In your
1971 Gremlin.
71
Gremlin. Lisa has a 2017 Bentley.
Well, I don't drive it myself. I have a driver drive
right,
the Bentley. So I don't know how my driver
Oh, I thought that was the
stations.
Rolls that he drove around, the Rolls Royce. And the
Bentley
Maybach.
Is a Rolls, isn't
Don't
it?
You have a Maybach, too?
A what?
So they have all, you know, digital buttons on those
cars. I don't know
cars.
What they do. I don't change it myself.
Right.
I have people for that.
Right, you have people that do that for you.
Carl's car is so old that he actually has to roll down the windows so he can hear the radio in other people's car.
There you go.
That's exactly right. You know, but that's how you keep your, you know, you don't have any atrophy to your muscles. You roll the window down. You know, you're actually using
your muscles.
Oh, yeah, that's
right.
Yeah.
Cranking it down.
We've got somebody that just said that they spin their dial and they're in Tennessee.
Yeah, that's
listening.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Absolutely. All right, so in this hour, Fibber McGee and Molly from 1940, and our next hour, Dragnet. So we have two more classic radio shows coming your way. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming drama Deepwater Horizon, inspired by the true story of the oil rig explosion in the Gulf of Mexico, April 20th, 2010. If you know this actress, you will win a $25 gift certificate for Luma Lattes, home of the best deep dish pizza.
312-981-7200. Here's a hint. I would date her, and she played Penny Lane in Almost Famous.
We support the music. We inspire the music. We're here because of the music.
312-981-7200. Give us a call. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are glad you're with us. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop, and we're going to play that movie clip one more time.
We support the music. We inspire the music. We're here because of the music.
We're going to talk to Brian from Crest Hill. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
We're glad you're here with us and that you called in, and we're hoping you know that actress's voice.
Yes, it's Kate Hudson.
Kate Hudson is right. You are a winner. We're so happy to give you a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. We hope you have a great pizza on us, and you can check them out at loumalnati's.com.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. All right. It is time for Fibber McGee and Molly, great comedy series. This starred real-life husband and wife, Jim and Marianne Jordan. They were natives of Peoria, Illinois, Lisa, and their radio show premiered in 1935. They lived at 79 Wistful Vista, and the show was written and co-created by Don Quinn. And also, you heard Harold Perry as Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve. He was a neighbor. He was his neighbor, Fibber's neighbor. And there was also other kind of zany characters that paid visits on every episode. Mayor Latrivia, played by Gail Gordon. You heard Wallace Wimple, the old-timer, all kinds of funny characters. And then there was the running gag of Fibber's hall closet. He had all kinds of junk in the hall closet. And about once a month, maybe every other four or five episodes, he would open the hall closet and the junk would bury him under there. And he'd go, I got to clean out that closet one of these days.
Hey, who hasn't said that, right?
Yeah. Sponsored by Johnson's Wax for many, many years. Harlow Wilcox did the announcing on this. It's heard on NBC. The radio show lasted until 1959, Lisa.
Wow.
Started in 35, lasted to 59. And it had two spinoff shows, The Great Gildersleeve and also Beulah, which was their maid.
Right.
Beulah the maid. They two shows spun off of Fibber McGee and Molly. All right, let's go back to a broadcast date of April 9th, 1940. The McGees are returning to Wistful Vista after their trip to Hollywood in an appearance on the Lux Radio Theater. That's the kind of theme of this episode. Let's go back to 1940, part one now of Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Marion and Jim Jordan as Fibber McGee and Molly with Bill Thompson, the King's Men, and Billy Mills Orchestra. Well, as you most likely know by now, our hero and heroine made what they firmly believed to be dramatic history in Hollywood on the Lux Theater of the Air. And here, glowing with triumph and swelled with success, eagerly looking forward to the plaudits of their friends, here, speeding homeward as fast as modern streamlined transportation will carry them, yes, here on the bus, approaching Wistful Vista, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
Any sandwiches left, Molly?
Well, let me see. Yes, dearie, just one.
Boy, it's lucky we're almost home. We'll just about make it. Just one sandwich, you say, huh?
Yes. You want it, McGee?
Oh, no. You go ahead and have it.
No, you. No, you.
Oh, stop this. Why don't you have it, Molly?
Well, I don't know. Aren't you hungry?
Oh, I can wait.
Well, so can I.
What kind of a sandwich is it, Molly?
I'll take a look. It's ham. Hmm.
Oh, ham, huh? With mustard?
Let's see. Yes, with mustard.
You don't like them with mustard, do you, Molly?
Whatever gave you that idea? That's the only way I do like a ham sandwich.
Oh, well... Oh, shucks, go ahead and eat it then, Molly. Unless it's too stale by now. I'd hate to have you eat a stale sandwich. Personally, I don't mind stale bread. I kind of like it, in fact.
I do, too.
You do? What's feel of it? Say, that ain't so stale.
I know. I had it wrapped up pretty well in wax paper.
There's nothing like wax to preserve things, is there?
That's what I hear, and from a very reliable source, too. They say that... Oh, heavenly days, McGee, let's quit stalling. Here, eat the sandwich.
Oh, no, I ain't gonna. You eat it. But quit waving it at me.
Well, don't shove my hand away like that. Oh, look out now.
Oh, shucks, you dropped it on the floor. I'll get it.
McGee, leave it lay. It's all dirty by now.
Well, I know it. I just wanted to shove it under the seat so we wouldn't trample all over it. Can't tell any Well, at least we don't have to argue about that anymore.
No, I guess we don't.
Oh.
Here, let me wipe that mustard off your chin.
Part of it must have flew up and hit me in the face.
Oh, look, we're getting close to town, McGee.
How can you tell?
We're sideswiping more cars.
Well, the old town hasn't changed much since we've been away.
We've only been gone a week, foolish.
Huh? Oh, yes. Well, it's been a wonderful experience, working with all them actors.
Ah, yes, indeed.
Cecil B. DeMille.
Yeah.
Did you hear DeMille asking my advice about directing?
No, I didn't. Why should he ask your advice about directing?
I don't know, but he did. He says, look here, Sonny, don't you think this would be a better play if you just turned one page of the script at a time? And I says, why, yes, Cecil, I says, I believe it would, he says. And he says, okay, put that taffy apple away till after rehearsal. Your pages are getting all stuck together. And I says, now,
oh, never mind now, never mind. I think we're getting close to home, dearie. It's time to put the dark glasses on and get out our fountain pens, huh?
Fountain pens?
Certainly, autographs, you know.
Oh, yes. Now I know how a genuine actor feels, Molly.
So do I.
How?
Hungry. Let's go up and ask the driver how much farther we have to go, McGee.
Okay. Come on. One side there, sis. Get out of the aisle. We want to get past.
You didn't say please, I betcha.
Please.
Hmm?
I said... Oh, well, where'd you get on, sis?
On the front end, through that little door.
No, I didn't mean that.
Well, you must have. That's the only one there is, I betcha.
Dad, rat it, I wasn't talking about how you got on. I meant where.
Hmm?
Sis, sometimes I think you do this just to befuddle me.
Sure.
Go on, I'll bet you don't even know what befuddle means.
I betcha I do, I betcha. Hi, diddle, diddle, a cat and befuddle.
That's the fiddle.
What is?
Befuddle.
You mean the fiddle's befuddle or befuddle's a fiddle?
I mean the befuddle. Look, sis, As the football player said when they flunked in geometry, I think we better drop the subject. You know where we've been?
Mm-mm, no.
You don't? Oh, come on now, guess.
No.
You must have seen the labels on our suitcase.
Mm-mm, no.
Sis, do you mean to stand there with your little mouth full of ticket stubs and tell me you don't know where we've been?
Yes.
Oh, then you do know.
No.
What?
Hmm?
I... Look, sis, we've been clear out in Hollywood. Well, don't you believe me?
Nah, there isn't any such place, I bet you. You just made it up.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Oh, yes, you did.
Oh, now, well, if there ain't any such place as Hollywood, where do all the moving pictures come from?
Gee, that's easy. They come from that little booth in the back of the theater.
Well, if you're so smart, sis, you must know what we were doing out in Hollywood. Must have been in all the papers.
Can you give me a clue? Hmm?
Sure. Now, what is it that happens on Monday? On Monday?
Monday, huh? Mm-hmm.
Cecil B. DeMille is connected with it, and it's got something to do with soap.
Soap, huh?
There. Now, do you know why we went to Hollywood?
Yes. You went to deliver Mr. DeMille's washing.
No.
Well, come on, dearie. You can't make an impression on anything that small.
I'll bet she's queued up in the garden in her little sunbonnet, giving the bees and the flowers the lowdown on life.
Say, McGee, do you want me to talk to the driver, or will you?
Oh, you ask him, Molly. Men drivers are more used to having women talk over their shoulders.
All right. Oh, driver...
No, lady, we don't stop again until we get to the station and then...
But now, driver...
You should have thought of that in the last stop. Now, go back and sit down until we get in.
Now, take it easy, bud. We just wanted to know how...
Wistful Vista. All right. All out for Wistful Vista. All out here.
Come on, McGee. I'll take the paper bags and you bring the suitcase. And be careful now, that rope is coming a little loose.
Hey, Molly. Look, over there at the railroad station.
What's all the excitement? There's a brass band and a lot of silk hats and banners. They must be expecting somebody on the train.
Yeah, let's go over and see what... Hey, wait a minute. I know who they're waiting for.
Who?
Us.
What?
Look, who is it that's just come back from scoring a tremendous success in Hollywood?
Why, oh, McGee, you don't
Why,
think
of
that...
course. They probably expected us to be all swelled up and come home in a private car on the streamlined train.
Well, oh, but what'll we do? The streamliner isn't due for 30 minutes.
No, but look, we just got time to sneak home, clean up a little bit, whip up a couple of simple, modest speeches, and get back to the station. Come on now, Molly,
but
hurry.
But, McGee, now how can we get off the train and be met by all those people when we aren't even on the train?
A mere detail, Mrs. McGee, a mere detail. We'll duck across the tracks in the railroad yard, and when the train pulls out, psst, there we are. Why, it's a cinch. Here, boy, take these bags. Get us a taxi. Molly, we ain't got much time. You find me a clean shirt?
Yes, I laid it on the bed, dearie. Did you find yourself a bite to eat?
Yep, and I found a half a cake in the bread box.
Heavenly days, I baked that cake for me birthday 2 weeks ago.
Oh.
Wasn't it pretty dry?
Yeah, it was too dry to eat, but the candles were good. If I get the wickups, you'll know what done it. Don't you get it, Molly? Wickups, hiccups?
Tain't funny, McGee.
I shouldn't have explained it. Should have left it for the smart ones.
Now, McGee, that train's due in 20 minutes. Better hurry and shave.
Shave? And wash all this makeup off?
Well, then, Mr. Muni, if you're going to leave that makeup on, you better touch up your eyeshadow a little.
Why, what's the matter with it? I had the best makeup man in Hollywood apply that there eyeshadow there.
That was quite a while ago, dearie. It isn't quite even now.
Huh?
Your right eye looks dreamy and your left eye looks sinister.
Well, I'll tell them I was playing a dual role. I'll say, how about my speech? I suppose I got to say something to the welcoming committee.
Well, you
Let's
sure.
see now. Yeah. Folks, that's kind of homey and democratic.
Yeah.
Folks, I wish to thank you for this tremendous ovation on behalf of myself and my supporting cast, Molly McGee. We're glad...
Where do you get that supporting cast? What am I, a splint on a broken leg?
Oh, well, shucks, this is just tentative.
Oh, oh dear, don't answer it.
I'll peek through the curtains. Oh, it's Billy Mills and Uppy. Shall I let him in?
No. Goodness, no. She's too gabby. We'd never get to the station.
Why does she keep coming around here anyway? We don't encourage her any. To her, we're just common people.
Search me. Water ought to seek its own level, even if it is just a big drip.
Hey, take a peek at the tender way she hangs on to Mills, will you?
Yeah.
Like she was a campfire girl and he was her marshmallow.
Quiet, dearie. Not so loud.
Oh, apparently the McGee's are still away. Well, let's not linger any longer, precious.
Okay, if that's the way you feel, Bubbles. I just thought this gazebo might give me the lend of a swallowtail suit till mine got here.
Oh, really, I don't think Mr. McGee has one to lend you. He always struck me as being a rather uncouth person.
Well, Eva, you hear that, Molly?
I like that. Don't you worry, dearie. You're just as couth as any man in town. Yes, couther, in fact.
That's the first portion of Fibber, McGee, and Molly, April 9th, 1940. We'll get back to it in a few moments. How many people are spinning their dial, Lisa?
Quite a few.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Who knew?
Yeah. Well, you know what? When I was growing up, I had a... I'm trying to think. I think it was a TEAC. T-E-A-C. TEAC. Tuner, and it had all the dials on there.
Yeah, I mean, people are mentioning there's transistor radios and there's a fine tuner on them. People are doing it from their cars that are a little bit older that don't have digital buttons on them.
And what about some of the people, and we get this a lot, people that have cathedral radios, you know, the old cathedral Philco radios or the, you know, with the green eye when they turn it on. They listen to this show a lot of times on their restored vintage radios.
And we have a lot of people have sent us pictures of their radios. So they're really, it's really something.
I used to collect those. I don't anymore, but I used to collect. Remember in my old office in Schaumburg, the big building, I had all those cathedral radios, remember? All those restored cathedral radios all over?
I don't
remember that.
I'm
no?
so sorry. I don't remember that.
Yeah. But a lot of people listen to this show on cathedral radios, which is very cool.
I remember your tables, but I don't remember your radios.
Because they're now in your home.
That I remember.
My granite tables. All right. We're tuning into Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Let's go back to April 9th, 1940 for the conclusion. Now, Jim and Marion Jordan as Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
And Mrs. McGee. Oh, did you ever notice the way she dresses? Positively dowdy.
Howdy, dowdy.
Well, there's no use sticking around this dump any longer, Cookie. We'll come back tomorrow and borrow McGee's outfit.
Oh, you will you?
Oh, Dr. Mills, may I call you William?
Just call me Willie.
Well, then, Willie, now that we're alone... There's something I've wanted to ask you for a long time.
Hey, what's this?
I don't just know how to say it, but this being leap year...
Heavenly day she's proposing to him, McGee.
And seeing that you and I... Well, that is, that I and you are... Well, rather we are. Oh, Willie, can't you see what I'm driving at?
You women drivers? What is it, Bobble?
Oh, tell me, Willie... Is it true that you sleep with your mustache in a snood? Oh, my. Well, come on, Maestro. And goodbye to you, Mr. and Mrs. McGee. I saw you.
Why, McGee, they knew we were here all the time.
The dirty eavesdroppers.
Well, McGee, we got to get a move on now.
Yeah, and I got to get this speech in shape.
All right, and then get that clean shirt on.
Yeah.
I've got to iron a slip. Now, I want you to be ready when I get
to let me see again. Folks, it is with a tug at our heart strings that we come back to Whistle Vista. A tinged feeling, perhaps.
McGee! Huh? McGee! Fibber! You know what I did?
What?
I left town with me electric iron turned on and it's burnt up me ironing board and blown all the fuses in the house.
The ironing board?
Oh, dear, come in.
Well, glad to see you back, folks. How was everything in Hollywood?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Wilcox. Simply wonderful.
Great place, Hollywood, Harlow. Those people do anything to make you happy. Why, I happened to say to a guy Sunday, I says, look, bud, I says, what's so unusual about this California weather? I says, and you know what? In ten minutes later, they put on an eclipse of the sun.
Well, look, Molly, did you meet Clark Gable?
No, but when we were down at the beach one afternoon, I did sit in one of his rowboats, I did.
Molly, that CG painted on that boat meant Coast Guard. But if you'll excuse me now, Harlow, we got to get going because
What's your hurry?
Well, confidentially, there's a big crowd at the railroad station to welcome us, Mr. Williams.
Yeah, they didn't know we were coming home by bus, and I ain't even got my speech ready. I got to get going.
Well, hey, wait a minute. I can help you with your speech, Fibber. I've spoken from practically every floor in town.
Oh.
Now, look, Fibber, all you have to do is be straightforward, sincere. Let them see that success hasn't changed.
Well, I thought of that.
And then say something like, folks, we know that one big broadcast is not a real test of our dramatic ability.
Fine.
Why, we've no more than scratched the surface.
Look out.
And surface scratches on floors and furniture can easily be avoided by using Johnson's Wax, the finest protection that money can buy for all wood surfaces. Good housekeepers everywhere say that Johnson's Wax is the greatest... Where are you going, Fibber?
I'm going to see if I can have as much success changing my shirt as you have changing the subject.
Okay. I try to give you a little friendly help, and you walk out on me. So you've gone Hollywood, eh?
My, he certainly is persistent, isn't he, dearie?
Yeah, you can't sidetrack a guy with a single-track mind, Molly. Where'd you say you put my shirt, Molly?
On the bed, dearie. And while you hurry and change, I'll make a quick cup of coffee. Oh, no, I can't either. There's no electricity.
Dad, rat it, we got more stops than a $1 million pipe organ. I said that line right. Come in.
Hello there, Johnny. Hello, daughter. Want to buy any books? Got some dandy ones here. Here's a good one by James Joyce. Smart young feller. Hides nothing but double talk.
No, thank you, Mr. Oldtimer. I don't believe we want any books today.
Hey!
We don't have much time for reading these days, my good fellow. Our theatrical work, you know.
Oh, theatrical work, eh? What's in, kids? Burlicue?
No, we ain't in Burlicue.
Heavenly days, I hope not.
No.
Imagine me, Gypsy Rose McGee.
Yeah, imagine that.
Well, what's so funny about it? I suppose you think I haven't got the...
No.
Well, what do you mean?
Oh, why, shucks, Molly, I was only trying to be... Well, what are you waiting for?
Who, me, Johnny?
Yes, you. As the lumberjack says to the redwood tree, I think you've been standing around here long enough.
That's pretty good, Johnny. But I heard a slightly different version. What? In a slightly different version I heard, one feller says to t'other feller, says, I see where this Fibber McGee and Molly have been on the air for Johnson's Wax 5 years next week. Is that so, says t'other feller? I like that program. I like it because it's clean. Well, said the first feller, why shouldn't it be? They're just about washed up. Boy, I thought that was... Oh, say, if you kids are in show business, how about buying a good scrapbook?
Oh, that's an idea, McGee, a scrapbook.
Now you're talking, old-timer. Give us the best one you got.
Here you are, Johnny. $2.
Thanks. Here's $2.
Much obliged. For 50 cents more, I'll leave my right thumb for a bookmark. So long, kids.
Well, Molly, our first scrapbook. Why, that dirty... Why, what's he mean, scrapbook?
Why, what is it?
Look, how to box in 10 easy lessons.
The King's Men singing a medley from Pinocchio.
Why does the gay little Dickie bird sing? Tweet, 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 tweet. Who put the zinc in the butterfly's wing?
What's the reason for the smile of the troubadour? Why does the breeze have a barrel of fun? Ooh, 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 ooh. Even the bee who's the son of a gun. Here's the wherefore and the why. They got no strings, neither have I got no strings to hold me down, to make me fret nor make me frown. I had strings, but now I'm free. There are no strings on me. Hi-ho, hi-ho, the merry oh, I'm as happy as I can be. And I want you all to know, nothing ever worries me. I've got no strings, so I have fun. I'm not tied up to anyone. How I love my liberty, there are no strings on me.
Happy little chap with a feather in his cap. Though they made me of wood, I never give a rap.
Always doing good as a little puppet should, chasing each gloomy day away. Little wooden feet, and best of all, little wooden seat, in case you fall. Little do you know, and yet it's true, that I'm mighty fond of you. Funny little toy, go play your part, bring a little joy to every heart. Never let a single tear be shed, my little wooden head.
That's the reason why I'm shouting hi-ho, the merry-o. Nothing ever bothers me. I want the world to know there are no strings on me. Oh, got no strings, I have fun. I'm not tied to anyone. How I love my liberty.
There are no strings, there are no strings, there are no strings, no strings, no strings on me.
Come on, McGee, here's our taxi. Grab the suitcase.
Okay, I'm coming.
Are you the Mr. Ronald McGee that called for a cab, Doc?
Why, yes, I am, Bud.
What's this Ronald business, McGee?
Well, shucks, what kind of a name is Fibber for a big actor? I was just trying out a couple of new ones, is all. Get in, Molly.
Where to, Doc?
Now, look, Bud, we want to go to the Union Station in a hurry.
Yes, we're coming in on the streamliner and some people are meeting us.
Now, wait a minute, lady. You just coming in on the streamliner?
Well, we really come by bus, you see.
We're not here yet.
Where are you?
We're on the train.
You just want to go down to the station and meet yourselves coming in, huh?
That's the idea, Bud. They don't realize we got here before the train did.
So you's got here before the train did.
Yes, and it's due any minute, so hurry.
Look, Doc, I don't like to be pedantic, you know what I mean? But if yous is gonna meet a train, which yous is riding on, how can yous get out off long enough to meet yourselves coming in?
Look, Bud, time's a-wasting. Let us worry about the more abstruse aspects of the case. You just get us down to the station in time for the streamliner.
Okay, Doc. Here you are. $1.40.
Okay, Bud, here you are. And 5 minutes to spare, too.
Gee, thanks. I hope the train ain't late so you don't keep yourself waiting.
Come on, Molly. We'll sneak around this way and walk a block or so up the track.
Oh, look, McGee. Huh? They're raising the welcome banners. The train must be about due. Aren't you excited, dearie?
Oh, yeah, kind of. Folks, we're glad to be back among with you. Or no. Folks, this tremendous ovation. Oh, come on, Molly, let's sneak a little closer to the crowd. There's so many, we won't be noticed.
Keep your hat down over your eyes, dearie, so they won't recognize you.
Okay. They're so happy to welcome us back, it'd be a shame to spoil everything for
sure.
them. Have they got our names spelled right on them banners?
Well, I don't dare look, McGee. I don't want to be seen.
Isn't that kid coming along the way? Here she comes!
Didn't even stop.
You and your ideas. Well, what do we do now?
Well, come on across the tracks, Molly. You know you's disappointing all these people. We'll tell them we got in early.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Oh, here we are. Here. Oh, here's Gildersleeve. Hey, Gildersleeve, here we are.
Well, hello, folks. Wasn't it wonderful? Did you see her?
Wait a minute. Where's everybody going? Tell him to come back. See who?
Mrs. Roosevelt. She just passed through on the streamliner.
Oh, dear, and I thought this was my day.
Well, it certainly was an inspiring sight, McGee.
Yeah. Well, come on, Ma. The balloon's gone up.
Well, well, I see you're all dressed up and have your suitcases with you. Are you going someplace, McGee?
Going? We've been.
Is that so?
Say, didn't you listen to the Lux Theater of the Air? Didn't you hear that big dramatic play they did? Didn't you pay attention when Cecil B. DeMille introduced the stars?
Why, no, I didn't. In fact, nobody in town did, McGee.
What you mean?
Well, some darn fool went away from home and left an electric iron on and blew out every fuse in town.
Imagine, McGee. Next week, we've been 5 years on the air for Johnson's Wax.
Funny you should mention that. I just got a telegram about it from one of our listeners.
Did you really? What'd he say?
Oh, here, I got it with me. He says, "My family have listened to you faithfully for past 5 years. Feel that there is strong bond between us."
Oh, isn't that sweet?
Yeah, but listen. He says, "Because we never go anywhere on Tuesday night, and neither does your program." Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat, inviting you all to join us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's Fibber, McGee, and Molly, a comedy from April 9th, 1940, as heard on NBC. Jim and Marion Jordan, real-life husband and wife, they were Fibber, McGee, and Molly throughout the whole run of the series, as heard on NBC. Sponsored by Johnson's Wax, with Harlow Wilcox doing the announcing. And how is that movement that we started going?
The Harlow movement?
Yeah, the Harlow movement, that people should start naming their babies.
Well, I don't know. Has anybody
Harlow
named a baby Harlow?
Since we started the movement.
I like the name.
Yeah,
I mean, no problem with it.
I think it works for a girl, too. Harlow could be a girl
that's
name.
That's what I said. Harlow is a great girl
yeah,
name.
Yeah, I like it. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. It is 1:05 in the morning. And we're on the greatest radio station in the history of radio stations. This station's been around a long, long time. And some of these classic radio shows aired on this station, including Little Orphan Annie aired on WGN way back when. And so did The Whistler and a lot of good stuff. I mean, this is just a legendary station. I grew up listening to WGN as a kid. I was born in Chicago and listened to WGN growing up. And then I got to be really good friends with Eddie Schwartz. And Eddie used to have me on the air with him. We'd play classic radio shows. And I always dreamed about having my own show here on WGN. And you know, when you dream and you work hard and you pray about it, things can happen. And so I'm very, very honored to have a show on WGN with my co-host Lisa Wolf, our producer Elif Garris. And we're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. Although Lisa gets here about 11:07, 11:08.
Yeah, sometimes I completely forget about
the
show.
I
don't even show up.
Runs in all frazzled and, you know, her hair is all, like, sticking out because of the wind and stuff.
My hair can't stick out. It's pretty straight.
She gets here. Aleph's here early. I'm here early. And Lisa just, you know, comes in, like, and starts bossing everybody around. Right,
yeah.
Aleph?
I'm always the first one here. I don't even know what to do with myself. I get here so early.
What do you think? What's the verdict?
She comes in here and she acts like she owns the place.
Yes, that's right. See, folks. Thank you.
Coffee
Elif.
Now, Elif.
Yeah,
producer.
Coffee. Do my nails,
Elif.
Yeah, whatever your name is.
Yeah.
And I remember that the other day she was like, "Look, I have a hangnail here, Elif. What are you waiting for? Get the file.
Clippers.
Well, yeah. Now after this, I'm going to be way meaner.
Yeah.
No, Lisa's not like that at all.
We threw her under the bus. Hey, what's the weather like down there?
Yeah, it's It's yeah.
Not good.
Yeah, no, it's good. I like it down there.
So in this hour, we're going to tune in to Dragnet, starring Jack Webb. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming comedy Masterminds, about a night guard who organizes one of the biggest bank heists in American history.
Really?
Yes.
All right. 312-981-7200. Win a Lou Malnati's pizza, right?
Yes, definitely the best one.
All right, so here's a hint. This actor played Hansel in Zoolander.
Whatever, dude. Whatever. Peace. God bless.
All right, peace.
Whatever.
If you know who that actor is, call us 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are so glad that you're with us, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Whatever, dude. Whatever. Peace. God bless.
Whatever, dude. Howard from Aurora, how are you?
Hey, Lisa. I hope you guys are doing good.
We're doing
great here.
What's going on with you?
Nothing. Just got to listen to that old-timey stuff.
Yeah, we feel the same way.
Wait, hey, Howard, let me ask you. What do you like? Do you like the detectives, the mysteries? What's your favorite?
Well, let me think. I like to stay awake with it. So you better shove Lisa there and wake her up, right?
Yeah.
Hey,
come on.
Hey.
I'll tell you what.
Let me tell you.
You know that.
Hey. Howard, she's always napping when these shows are on. She's just napping away.
Howard. Carl is a big napper. I can't even close my eyes. I'm like too, like, you know, wound up. But Carl, not so much.
Yeah.
Puts his head down and...
So do you like the comedies or the mysteries, or what's your favorite? What's your favorite, Howard?
The comedies.
He likes the comedies. All right.
See?
Very cool. Very cool.
Just like me. Howard, who is that actor?
Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson is right. You are a winner. We're so happy to give you a $25 gift certificate, and we hope you have a great deep dish pizza, or any kind of pizza, or anything at all from Lou Malnati's. They are the home of Chicago's best, and you can order that online at loumalnati's.com. And thank you so much for calling in and for staying up with us.
And for having you guys to listen to
this.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We love what we do, and we're glad you're listening.
Yeah.
And it's time, Lisa, for Dragnet. You know what? This was a very interesting radio show. We play quite a few of these. We have a lot of them. I think I have about 1,000 episodes of Dragnet in the collection. This was a police procedural. It started in 1949, lasted to 1957. And I tell you what, it was true crime stories of closed cases. And I think that's what made it so much fun and interesting to listen to, because you were hearing this dramatized radio show, but it was a true case. I mean, this really happened. Yeah, there was some embellishments, I'm sure, right, here and there, but they took the script. I mean, they made the script or adapted the script from a true crime case from the LAPD. Now, Jack Webb starred as Los Angeles Police Detective Sergeant Joe Friday, and each case was detailed from start to finish, and Friday narrated the action all along the way. And this show, Dragnet, had the most sound effects men. It had 5 sound effects experts, where other shows had 1 or 2 sound effects men. This had 5 because it was just riddled with sound effects. There's so many different. If you listen really carefully, you'll hear. And some of the best supporting characters, actors, were the characters on this show: Frank Lovejoy, Paul Frees, Parley Bear, William Conrad, Peggy Weber, of course, who's been on this show. And there were some movies on Dragnet, and then 16 seasons on television. It was on 9 seasons on radio and 16 seasons on television. So
slightly successful.
Yeah, and then Tom Hanks, I believe it was Tom Hanks and Dan Aykroyd, did sort of a send-up of this, you know, a movie of Dragnet. It was a comedy, but, you know, Dragnet was a serious show. It was a serious police show. So this is a broadcast from December 15th, 1953. It's called The Big Brink, and it stars Jack Webb along with Ben Alexander. Here's part one now of Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true.
The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. A gang has hijacked and robbed a bank truck. They've stolen over $100,000. There's no lead to their identity. Your job? Get them.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Thursday, June 5th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Chief of Detective Staff Brown. My name's Friday. I was on my way back from the business office, and it was 10:52 p.m. when I got to room 27A. Robbery.
Did you get him?
Yeah, here's the gun.
You got the double aught buck?
Yeah, Jack. Here you go. Any word yet?
No, we ought to be hearing pretty quick.
Nothing from Herman and Benson, huh?
Last we got from them, they were over on Hobart.
No action there?
Nothing.
I got it. Robbery Friday. Yes, ma'am. That's right. Well, when was this? No. No, that's a burglary. If you'll hold on just a minute, I'll have you switch them. Yes, ma'am. Hold on just 1 minute. Would you give this call to 2524, please? That's right, burglary. Thank you. Woman who wants somebody to come out and talk to her about her husband's work pants being taken from the clothesline.
You should have gone out.
Yeah. You got a cigarette? I'm fresh out.
Here you are. Got a match?
Yeah, thanks.
Well, you might as well sit down. Take it easy. You got no idea how long we're going to be here.
Guess so. You know, I'm still not real sure about how this tip came in. You want to fill me in?
Call came through this afternoon. Man refused to give his name. Just said he had some information he thought we'd like to have.
No idea who it was, huh?
No. Said it wasn't important. Went on to say that he could tell us where to pick up the men who held up the bank truck.
Well.
Well, I figured it might be a crank, so I asked him how we could be sure the story was true.
How'd he answer that?
Said he could prove it. Said he had some of the serial numbers on the stolen bills.
Could check out?
Yep. Gave me the numbers from 10 of the 20s. I checked the serial numbers. They're good.
And that's when he said he'd call back, huh?
Yeah, said he'd call tonight around 10 and give us the address where we could pick up the men.
It's late now, about an hour, huh?
Yeah. But he knows what he's talking about. We gotta be here when the phone rings.
No way of getting an ID on him, huh?
None.
What'd he say about the men? They heavy?
And the way he tells it, they're loaded. Got all the guns and ammunition they need to hold out for a week.
He knows that. Why couldn't he give us the address this afternoon?
He said he wanted to put a lot of distance between him and the rest of them.
Say how many there were?
Not right out. The way he talked, though, we figure there are three.
Any names?
No, said he'd tell us where to pick them up. Said when we blew the whistle, they'd tell us.
I'd be a little tight taking them in, huh?
If the way they handle the guards on the truck is any indication, it isn't going to be a picnic.
How many men we got?
Herman and Benson. We can call them in. Murph and Rafferty. Stewart and Creasy.
Where are they now?
Well, I saw Murph and Raft out at the business office just a minute ago. Said they'd be right in. I'll get it. Robbery Friday. Yes, it is. Where? Yeah, put them through. Call from San Francisco. Operator says station to station.
Might be our boy.
Huh, you'd have to fly up north to get here this fast.
Airlines don't ask for recommendations when they sell a ticket.
Wait just a minute. This Friday. Who's this? Okay, if that's the way you want it. Yeah, give me that address. All right, let me read that back to you. 1657 Garfield Place, apartment 408. Is that right? Okay. Why don't you tell us your name? It won't do any... Hello. Hello. I hung up.
I'll have the business office get on it, see if they can come up with a number. You got the address?
Yeah, I got that. Here. The way he put it, job might be tougher than we figured.
What do you mean?
Well, I asked him his name. I told him it wouldn't make any difference if he told us.
Yeah?
He said it'd make a lot of difference. Said they'd kill him if they found out that he finked on them.
That figures.
Yeah. Said that when he reads in the papers that they're dead, then he'll come in.
When they're dead.
Yeah. Says we won't take them alive. 10 days previously, on Thursday, May 26th, three men had stopped an armored truck on its way to the Federal Reserve Bank. The truck had stopped for collection on Wilshire Boulevard. The three holdup men had approached the truck and produced sawed-off 12-gauge shotguns. At gunpoint, two of the men forced the drivers to go out to the San Fernando Valley. The third followed in another car. On a side road south of Ventura Boulevard, the suspects had tied and then beaten the driver and the guard. The two men were placed in the back of the truck, and after stealing all of the cash in the vehicle, the thieves had driven off. As soon as the theft was discovered, men from the Federal Bureau of Investigation were notified. Together with them, Frank and I followed down every lead. The crime lab went over the truck but found nothing that would help us in getting to the thieves. Latent fingerprints were able to come up with nothing. The driver of the truck and the guard had been shown the mug books, but they were unable to make an identification. The method of operation was checked through the stats office, but when the leads that developed were checked out, we were in the same position as when we first got the call. We had no idea who the thieves might be. Descriptions obtained from the two victims were broadcast to the entire nation, but there were no kickbacks. The FBI weighed and sifted all evidence in its Washington headquarters, but they came up with the same results we had. Nothing. The phone call from the informant was the first concrete lead that we'd gotten. There were 9 men from robbery division and 3 teams from the FBI in the operation. From the information we had, we knew the suspects were armed and they were dangerous. The people in the building were gotten out of their apartments. The building itself was completely surrounded. 1:36 a.m., we moved in.
Boys in the street are set. Let's go.
All right. Did you check the manager?
Yeah. Descriptions of the men in the apartment match the one we got from the driver of the truck. Checks out to be the same guys.
The manager say how many there were?
3. She's not sure they're all in.
All right. Sounds like somebody's moving around in there.
Yeah. You ready?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Police officer, stand still.
What are you doing in here?
You here alone?
Yeah, alone. What are you looking for, a convention?
Where are the other two?
What two?
Nobody else, Joe.
Closet over there looks like an arsenal, loaded with guns. Couple of sawed-off shotguns.
You guys got no right to come in here like this. I don't know what you're looking for, but you ain't gonna find it.
What's your name?
Hank Peterson.
You rent this apartment with 2 other guys. Manager tells us that they're Harvey Fitzgerald and Lou Colton. Is that right?
Yeah, they live here.
Where are they now?
I don't know. Out. Maybe to a movie. I don't know.
When do you expect them back?
Well, look, they're big fellas now. They don't have to get me to sign a report card. They do what they want. They went out. I don't know where. They didn't tell me. They also didn't tell me when they'd be back. Well, what's this all about?
Where'd you get those guns in the closet?
They don't belong to me.
Who do they belong to?
One of the guys.
Which one?
Why are you coming in here and asking all these questions? I ain't done nothing. You got no beef with me. I know anything about the guns. Maybe Lou likes to hunt. I don't know.
They belong to Colton, huh?
Yeah, he brought them.
You don't know where he is now?
I told you. If I knew where he was, I'd tell you. I don't want any trouble. I don't like to have people pointing guns at me. Would you put that one away?
Turn around.
What?
I said turn around. Get over to the wall. Put your hands up on it.
Big deal. What happens now? You kick my feet out and I fall down?
Stand still.
I'll get a jump.
They're gonna find nothing on me. I tell you, I'm clean.
Nice try, Peterson. Here's a .38 Colt. Joe had it in his belt.
You go around pretty heavy for a fellow that doesn't want trouble, don't you?
I carry a lot of money. Sometimes I think some guys are trying to take it away from me. I got to protect myself. Yeah. Anybody's got the right to protect themselves.
Yeah, you got a permit for this gun?
No, I didn't get around to it yet. I'm going to, though, right away. I'll get one. You know how it is. You mean to do something, but you forget. Hey, can I stand up straight now?
Yeah.
Come on, Peterson. Get your hands behind you.
Maybe you guys will tell me what this is for. What are you looking for?
We'll tell you downtown.
Well, you know you're making a big mistake.
Isn't that right?
Well, sure, you really call this one wrong. You're dragging in an innocent man. I'm clean. I made a mistake when I didn't register the gun. I'll cop to that, but that's the edge. I don't go past there.
No, you got it wrong, Peterson.
Read me how.
We got you going in for the bank truck robbery. You and your 2 friends, you're going to stand for it.
Keep talking about my 2 friends. I got no friends. I move in with a couple of fellas. All of a sudden, I got a piece of some action they're shoving. You got it wrong, cop.
You aren't going to tell us you happened to be here at the wrong time, are you?
Look, I'm from Chicago. I got a lead on a job out here. It gets cold in Chicago in the wintertime. I don't like the cold. I get a lead on a job out here in California, so I put an ad in the paper telling how I'd like to drive out with the guy, share expenses. Fellow that answers the ad wants to leave when I got to go is Lou Colton. I took a third of the tab driving out. We got into town, he's got this apartment lined up, this one right here. I got no place to stay, so he says for me to pad down with him. That's it. The beginning, the middle, the end. Anything outside of that, I don't know. If you got trouble with Lou, then take it up with him, but don't make me fit in. I got no part of the action. I don't want any.
What about the gun?
Hmm?
The gun you had on you.
I tried to explain that. I meant to get a permit for it. I didn't get around to it yet.
What about the ones in the closet?
Well, talk to Lou. They belong to him. Maybe he's going to open a museum.
All right. Let's get out of here.
Come on, let's go.
Look what you did to the door, breaking it up like that. No reason. All you had to do was knock. Landlady's going to be pretty sore about it. I'd have let you in if you'd have knocked. Breaking up a door like that, she's going to be real sore. Probably won't talk to me.
Well, it's going to be a while before she's got the chance.
All right, that's the first portion of a true crime case as told on Dragnet. That's called The Big Brink, starring Jack Webb along with Ben Alexander. And Ben Alexander followed Jack Webb over to television with this, you know, this transition to TV about 50, probably about 51 or 52, 53, somewhere in there. So right around this time, this broadcast aired. And so Ben Alexander and Jack Webb were playing the roles on radio and television at this time. So I hope you're enjoying this. We'll get back to it in a little bit. So how many kitty cats have we had come in so far?
Quite a few, but not 12.
You don't have 12 yet?
No, we have
So I guess
close.
My
One,
dollar
two,
is
three,
safe.
Four, five, six.
Oh, we're halfway there. That's scary.
Yeah.
We might make it.
Uh-oh. Six more for pretzels.
I need every dollar I have. So
I know.
Hopefully 11 will come in and not 12.
All right.
And then I won't have to get Lisa some pretzels.
Yeah. That would really put you out.
I would have to get up out of my chair.
Yeah, and walk all the way down the hall and spend a dollar of your own money.
Spend a dollar on
That's
Lisa
a lot to ask.
For pretzels. And then walk all the way back.
Those are those really good pretzels, those like big old-time like sourdough pretzels. Those are really good.
And I would bring them back to her. I'd give them to her, and then she'd eat them all. She wouldn't share probably
Could
with
you
me.
Could you imagine actually doing that without having to do it just because? Just
Why? Why'd I do
just
that?
Just on a kind of appreciation.
That doesn't make any sense to
right?
me. It doesn't
okay.
compute.
Right. Gotcha.
Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. We're back. It's 1:35 in the morning on a Monday morning. Right, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
Smiley Lisa. We're listening to Dragnet. I'm going to get back to that in a minute. I want to remind all of our listeners that we have a website for this show, too. It's WGNRadioTheater.com. Go there. We have our full schedule of all the shows we're going to play here on Saturday and Sunday nights. We also have a store. You click through to the main website, you'll see a store, all kinds of fun classic radio shows on CD via digital download. We have classic television shows on DVD, all kinds of other fun stuff. There's pictures of Lisa there, too, tons and tons of it.
Yeah.
Tons of pictures of Lisa.
Yeah, I take a lot of pictures.
So just go there and check out our Facebook page, too. How many kitty cat photos
I
do we have?
We've only gotten
six?
One more, so maybe seven. That's it.
I think I'm going to win this.
I think
my dollar is safe.
Nobody wants me to have pretzels tonight.
You can just...
No problem.
You know...
I'll just be hungry.
Yeah, sorry.
Don't worry about me.
It's all right.
That dollar...
You're too salty anyway.
Yeah.
You're kind of salty. You're like a sailor.
Yeah,
salty sailor, you.
I like those big fat pretzels.
Do you?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
They're going to stay in that
yes,
vending machine.
Yes, they are. Maybe
there.
Next week I'll do better.
All right. Let's go back to December 15th, 1953 for the conclusion to The Big Brink on Dragnet.
While Frank and I took Henry Peterson downtown, the other officers from robbery maintained the surveillance on the apartment. Because of the construction of the building, it was impossible to wait inside of the room. However, all of the entrances were covered. 2:40 a.m. We checked the suspect through R&I, but we found that he had no record in Los Angeles. His fingerprints were taken and forwarded to Washington for checking. He was printed and mugged and then placed in a cell in the felony section at the main jail. The rest of that night, the watch in the apartment continued without results. The following morning, Frank and I met with Lieutenant Smyers at a special show-up of the suspect for the driver and the guard of the armored car. Without hesitation, they both stated positively that Peterson was one of the men who'd held them up. The kickback arrived from Washington with the information that Peterson was wanted for escape from the state penitentiary in New Jersey. He'd been convicted on a charge of murder and robbery and given a life sentence. The record showed that he'd escaped from the prison on Friday, May 9th, 2 weeks before the truck had been robbed. 4:15 p.m., we had him brought from his cell and Frank and I talked to him in the interrogation room at the main jail.
You got a cigarette?
Yeah, here.
Thanks. Here's a match.
What do we got going?
Same thing. We want to know about the robbery of that armored car.
You figure there's something I could tell you on it, huh?
We wouldn't be here otherwise.
I'll make you a deal.
We don't make them.
No, hear me out. You might go for this.
We can't promise you anything.
You're asking me to come over to your side. Seems like you'd be willing to come a little closer to the line.
What do you got to say?
How bad you got me nailed?
As deep as it can go.
For real?
That's right.
I'll lay it out.
All of it?
Yeah.
We got the kickback from Washington. We know you're wanted for escape. We checked the guns from the apartment. Found out they were taken in a burglary in Chicago Tuesday, May 13th.
Go ahead.
We checked with the Chicago papers. The ad you told us about asking for a ride out here, it was never run.
You guys are sure thorough.
The victims of the robbery identified your picture.
They sure?
They're sure.
No chance for a mistake?
No chance.
If I cop out, where am I going to do the time?
We don't decide then.
You think they'll send me back to Jersey?
I told you, we got no say in that.
It's so cold back there. It's nice here in California. I like to stay here. Nothing you guys can do so I can take the fall in Quentin, huh?
Nothing.
Anyway, you hear it, I'm nailed, huh?
That's right.
Okay. Maybe it's marked down that I copped out. They'll let me stay in California.
It'll be put down that way.
Okay. Where do you want me to start?
Try the beginning.
Good a place as any.
You're with the holdup, huh?
Yeah.
How about the other two?
You picked them up yet?
No. They haven't come back to the apartment.
Might be good if they didn't.
Where do you come up with that?
Heavy, real heavy.
What are their names?
Luke Colton and Harvey Fitzgerald.
Those are the names in the mailbox. Are they real?
As far as I know.
You aren't sure, huh?
No. Part of what I told you is true. I broke out of a jail in Jersey, then beat it to Chicago. Laid around for a couple of days and started to look for some action. I was broke. I needed a score to set me up. Sitting in a bar down on State Street one night, and I met Lou and Harvey. They tipped me to the job out here.
You mean they came all the way out here to pull the one job?
Yeah. They got a rumble about how it'd be a cinch. Came out to run it off. Then they figured on going back, leaving you cops with nothing.
When were they figuring on leaving?
I don't know. This was their part of the deal. I told them going in I wanted to stay out here. Didn't make any difference to them. We all figured that if we cut up a $100,000 score, none of us was going to look bad. For all I know, they might be on the way back now.
Their clothes were still in the apartment.
You know how many suits you can buy with a third of $100,000?
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, after the job, we made the split. Talked it over and decided to dig in for a few days and then take off. At least, they decided to leave. Didn't say when. I told you now, they might be on the way back now.
Who else knows you're in on the job?
Huh?
Outside of you three, Colton, Fitzgerald, who else knows about it?
Isn't anybody.
Well, where's your part of the money?
Got it down the bus depot. Got it in the locker down there.
How long's it been there?
Since day before yesterday. How often do they clean out them lockers?
Every 24 hours.
And then there's $33,000 floating around in the check room.
You got the key of the locker?
Yeah.
Where is it?
In my shoe. I got it taped from the sole inside.
You want to give it to us?
Well, no, but I don't guess there's any other way.
No.
Okay.
You spend any of the money?
You mean the stuff we stole?
That's right.
No, not a dime. Why do you ask that?
Who else might know the serial numbers on the bills?
Well, nobody. Nobody but us, and I guess the guys at the bank, they got a record of them, I guess.
How about Colton and Fitzgerald? They spend any of their part?
I don't know. You got to ask them that.
The car you drove out after the armored truck, who'd that belong to?
Colton. It's the one we drove out here in.
What kind of car is it?
Plymouth, 1952.
What model?
Sedan.
Color?
Light blue.
You know the license number?
No, I never paid any attention to it.
What state's it out of?
Illinois.
Who drove the car when you went on the holdup?
Harvey.
Fitzgerald, huh?
Yeah. He drove the car and Lou and I went in the truck.
Either of them been arrested before?
I'm not sure, but I think Lou fell in New York. I'm not sure, though.
How about Fitzgerald?
No. At least he never said anything about it. Only way I knew about Lou is that he talked about the food in Sing Sing. That's the way I knew about him.
You know what he fell for?
Armed robbery, I think, and there was a kidnap rap, too, but he beat it.
He out clean?
I don't know.
Seems like you planned a job with two guys that you didn't know very well, doesn't it?
I was hungry and I was cold. I wasn't about to ask for a life story when they offered me a part of the action.
How'd they pick you?
I told you, I was in a bar on State. Lou and Harvey came in. Both of them were carrying a load. I was sitting there drinking beer, just the three of us in the place, and Lou was drinking pretty heavy. He gets in a beef with the barkeep, and I saw the roll he was carrying, so I figured that if I could take his side in the brawl, maybe I could make a touch. We walked out of the bar, and he offered to buy me a meal. Next thing I know, I'm on the way to California. I'm a partner in a piece of goods that looks safe.
All that time in the car, and you didn't find out anything about your two partners?
We drove straight through. When we weren't driving, we were sleeping. Anyway, I wasn't a solid member of the club. I wasn't about to get my nose mashed in for having it someplace where it didn't belong. I figured if they wanted me to know something, they'd tell me.
Did you go with them for the guns?
No. They already got those when I fell in.
You knew they were stolen.
Guys turn up with that kind of muscle and can't come from anywhere else. Sure, I knew it was stolen.
Colton and Fitzgerald have any friends out here?
No, not in L.A.
Anywhere on the coast?
Well, I hear Lou's got some people up north.
Where?
Maybe San Francisco, Marin County, I don't know. Might even be Oakland, somewhere around the Bay Area.
They say anything about going up there?
No. Of course, they might have. The way Lou likes to eat, coming out here, he'd go 10 miles out of the way because he knew a place that had a good chili size. Think nothing of it. Never saw anybody who liked to eat so much. Real gourmet. Only with him, it was glutton.
He mentioned any names of people he knew up north?
No, just said he had people.
Anything about the car they're driving that'd make it easy to spot?
What do you mean?
Well, like a dented fender, a scratch, anything to identify it.
Yeah, it might be something. There's a kind of scratch in the back left fender, I think. Woman backed into us on the way out here. Cut right through the metal.
You think of any reason why they might ditch the car?
No. We kept a close tab on the papers right after the job and looked to see how much you had on it. When we didn't see anything, we figured the car was all right. I don't think they'd ditch it. It'd be pretty easy to trace. Lou owns it outright. Unless he wanted to try to grab cold plates, he'd drive it like it was.
Okay. We'll get you your things, and you can come over to the city hall and make a statement.
How about the key to the locker?
Oh, yeah. Here it is. Probably some money due on the package I'll have to owe you.
We'll take care of it.
Too bad, isn't it?
What's that?
$33,000. I haven't got the dough to bail out the package.
Well, it works out even.
What?
You'd have no place to spend it. An immediate APB was gotten off carrying the names and descriptions of the two suspects. Also a description of the car. A radiogram was sent to DMV at Illinois, requesting the license and description of any car registered to a Lewis Colton. While Eleanor Eastlack took Peterson's statement, Frank got in touch with the telephone company. They'd finished checking the phone call we'd gotten from San Francisco, but the information they gave led us no farther toward apprehending the suspects. The call had been made from a pay booth in the Ferry Terminal building. We got in touch with the FBI and filled them in on the developments. As a result of Peterson's statement, the number of men maintaining the surveillance at the apartment on Garfield Place was cut to one team working days and one team working the night watch. We put a call in to San Francisco and talked to Chief of Inspectors James English. We filled him in on what had happened. He assigned Inspectors Sutton and Zimmerlin to work with us on the case. 5:46 p.m. We checked out a trip car and we left for San Francisco. It took us a little under 10 hours to drive the 405 miles between the two cities. At 4:03 a.m., we stopped in Oakland and put in a call to the San Francisco Police Department. How much? Yeah, just a minute. Frank, you got a quarter?
Yeah.
Thanks. Here you are. 264, please. Hello, this is Joe Friday. Yeah. You got a message there for me from Charlie Sutton or Jules Zimmerlin? Yeah. No, we just got in. Yeah. Oakland. What? Just a minute. You see that street sign up there?
Yeah, wait a minute. Fifth and Poplar.
Fifth and Poplar, yeah. No, we're coming right over. When was this? I see. Well, if Charlie calls in, tell him that we're on the way, will you? Right, thank you. Well, we're almost too late.
What do you mean, they got a lead?
Sutton and Zimmerlin called in 30 minutes ago.
Yeah?
They got the car waiting for the suspects now.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
The address the business office had given me on the phone was a large garage located at the corner of Union Avenue and Lynch Streets. When Frank and I got there, we met with Inspectors Sutton and Zimmerlin. They told us that when they'd gotten the APB, a call had gone out immediately to the officers in the city to be on the lookout for a 1952 blue Plymouth with a dent in the left rear fender and carrying Illinois license plates. The suspects had parked the car in a no-parking zone on O'Farrell Street between Taylor and Mason Streets. At the peak hour of traffic, the car had been towed away from the parking place and left in a garage. While it was in the garage, the information on it had been received from our department and an immediate stakeout was placed on it. We felt reasonably sure that the suspects would return for the automobile. They had no reason to think that there might be anything wrong. The address of the garage had been left so that they might find the car. All that would be necessary to release it would be the payment of the fine for overtime parking along with the towing and garage fee. The garage itself was a large building. It provided four stories for parking. The suspect's car was on the basement level. We were able to keep watch on it from a small office near the exit ramp. The attendants were instructed to act as if nothing was wrong when the suspects came in. Once we knew that they were in the building, the entrances and exits would be blocked and they would be taken into custody. There was nothing to do but wait. 5:30 a.m., no sign of Colton and Fitzgerald. 6:15 a.m., Frank went out and brought back some hot coffee. 6:45, 7 a.m., people began to come into the garage to get their cars, but not the two suspects. The later it became, the more difficult it would be for us to take the two men into custody. If there was going to be any shooting, we'd be in a bad position with civilians in the range of fire. 7:30, 8, 8:04 a.m., somebody coming down here.
Yeah. You see who it is?
No. Jules.
Yep.
You and Charlie want to cover the other side?
Right.
And watch it. We should be able to get a pretty good look at him.
Yeah.
Lousy deal. You parked the car and it towed off the street. What kind of town is this?
They got a sign. You should have put it in the garage.
Yeah, you and your smart ideas. You, Reed, why didn't you see the sign?
Who can tell you anything?
It's Colton and Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
You see Jules and Charlie?
Wait a minute. Yeah, over by the gray Merc. Looks like they're all set.
All right, let's go.
Now, let's get this crate out of here. We can have some breakfast with the rope if you got it. If the cops pick their bank, they should have been more than you. Still not sure they're the right thing to do. Look, you don't have to think. If I wanted somebody for that, you'd still be back east.
You know one of these days you're going to open that mouth just a little too wide.
Now, what do you guys want?
Police officers, you're under arrest.
Run her! Hit him off, Joe!
The ramp, Joe!
I'll get him. This isn't the way out.
You follow your own, Mac, cop.
The doors are blocked, Colton. You're in here for good.
You're wearing the wrong kind of glasses. I'll get out.
Now, Now, look, we got you for robbery. Don't make it any more.
Joe?
Yeah. He's over in the corner. How about Fitzgerald?
Sutton and Zimmerman got him. Two of their guns in their lap. On no part of trouble.
Colton doesn't figure it that way.
I'll try to get around him.
Now, watch yourself.
Keep those people back out of the doorway. Go on, Frank. I'll cover you.
You come near me, cop. I'll kill you.
There's three more, Colton. You aren't going to get by all of us. Your partner quit. Why not be smart like him?
He's not smart. He's scared.
All right, Colton. I'm coming to you.
You do it. You'll be dead when you get here.
Throw down that gun. Colton? Colton?
You see him, Joe?
No.
Take it easy, Joe.
Colton.
How about it?
He's hit. I can't tell how bad. He's still got the gun.
Colton! You gonna hear me throw that gun out here? Nothing.
Come on. Better call an ambulance.
Right.
Never should have taken us.
Better take it easy, Colton. You're hit where it shows.
Never should have taken us. Two of you, two of us.
You got it wrong, mister.
Huh?
You were outnumbered going in.
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On September 18th, trial was held in Department 92, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. Harvey Ned Fitzgerald and Louis Jeffrey Colton were tried and convicted of kidnapping, robbery in the first degree, and violation of the Dangerous Weapons Control Act. They were found guilty and sentenced as prescribed by law. Kidnapping is punishable by imprisonment for a period of from 1 to 25 years in the state penitentiary. Robbery in the first degree by imprisonment for a term of not less than 5 years. Violation of the Dangerous Weapons Control Act by imprisonment in the state prison for a period of not less than 5 years. Henry Vincent Peterson was remanded to the authorities of New Jersey for completion of his sentence. A hold was placed on him by the state of California in the event he is paroled.
Be sure to read the current issue of Photography Workshop for an interesting and informative look behind the scenes with Dragnet. That's Photography Workshop, the current issue.
You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Herb Ellis, Vic Perrin. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Watch an entirely different Dragnet case history each week on your local NBC television station. Please check your newspapers for the day and time. Hear Merrill Muller in the news next on the NBC Radio Network.
That is a terrific radio broadcast of Dragnet. You heard Hal Gibney there talking about the fact that you can watch an entirely new Dragnet show on television. So they would have a radio show, and then they did a different episode for TV because they figure, you know what, if we listen to it on the radio, we're not going to want to watch a television show. Although Have Gun Will Travel didn't do that. Have Gun Will Travel would have the radio episode and then the television episode like a day later, and it was the same one.
Same episode. Adapted differently.
Yeah. Huh. But many of these radio shows were simultaneously on television. Now, not at the same time they were, like the very moment they were on the radio,
at that same timing, they're on radio and television.
Right. I don't think there was any that were on radio and TV, at the same time. No.
Yeah.
But like Jack Benny, yes?
You can keep going. I just was going to say something
after. Right ahead. You go right ahead.
Well,
you're the producer.
Lisa, you just got one cat closer to your pretzel.
Oh, you got another cat in?
I'm afraid I'm not quite there.
Oh, they called it in? How can you call it in?
Well, he's not able to email her.
Okay.
For reasons that are out of his control.
Okay. All right. So that's seven then. You're still five away, though.
Yeah,
I think I'm going to make it. Yeah, because there's like only 6 minutes left. So,
You save your dollar.
All right. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, Lisa, that's going to do it for this edition of the WGN Radio Theater, episode 112 in the series. And what I love about Elif, there's many, many things I love about Elif, but one of the things is she's a very hardworking young lady, and she will have the podcast up in no time, like in 20, 30 minutes or so. She'll have that podcast up of our show that we just broadcast, a three-hour show. With the podcast, it's less than 3 hours, though, because there's no commercials, right?
Yeah.
This is correct?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Very cool. All right, so when I'm driving home, I'll podcast, well, no, Bluetooth it, right?
Right.
And listen to
a little more Carl.
How mean Lisa was
a
to me the whole
more
night.
Carl. You got to get some a little more talk time in there.
Yeah. All right, so next week, Lisa and I and Elif will be, well, no, Elif's not going to be here next week. What?
No.
Oh, no.
Well, we'll have somebody else. We don't know who will be
Won't
yet,
be the same.
But it will be different.
This show will not have the same vibe.
That is true.
Just won't. But we'll be here next week at 11 o'clock on Saturday and also on Sunday, two different shows. We'll have The Great Gildersleeve. We'll have Casey Crime Photographer, Escape, The Whistler, The Aldrich Family, and Gangbusters. That's next week right here on the WGN Radio Theater. Guess who just walked into the room?
It's got to be Nick DiGilio.
Hey.
It is Nick DiGilio.
Hi.
Or it's an imposter that looks exactly like him.
That would be terrifying.
One is enough, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
I just have to tell you, two people just are texting in pictures of their cats. They're hoping that Lisa gets some pretzels
Do you know
tonight.
About this contest that we have?
It's crazy.
Send in a picture
your cat,
of your cat. Yeah. And it's great. You know, we give away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter mm-hmm. every single month. And people, if they would switch over to Cat's Pride kitty litter, they are doing a lot of great things for the environment because it's half the weight as other kitty litters.
Mm-hmm.
But also a portion of the proceeds go to help kitties, cats, and dogs in shelters all across the world.
Right.
You
That's
know,
great.
So it's really cool. And we asked for people to send in. We wanted to hit a dozen of them before the end of the night. And I was going to buy Lisa some pretzels, but we only got to about 8 or 9. So I saved a dollar.
Yeah.
So that's safe. So that was good, too.
I'm going to try much harder next week.
You know?
And maybe I'll reach my goal.
A dollar is not as easy to come by as it used to be.
Yeah.
Right?
It costs a dollar for pretzels?
It's a dollar.
It's a dollar over there.
So
$1.25 for peanuts.
I'm going to save my shekels this week.
Okay.
So how are you, Nick?
I'm all right.
And what's going on tonight? What's on or on this morning?
Movie reviews coming up. My dad will call in and tell a joke. And we'll get a visit from Eric Childress, who is at the Toronto International Film Festival right now.